Good afternoon, and welcome to week 35 for those keeping score, week 3 of this year, of Job. We are towards the end of the 20th chapter. Today we get to bid goodbye to Tsofar, which we do without too many tears, frankly, but so it goes. Not everybody can be your friend, right? Last week we read most of Tsofar's second speech. You can actually see on the sheet, in the part where I gave the introduction to chapter 21, I give you a table, much as I've been doing for the various speakers in the book, just to show the way Tsofar speaks and the way Job replies. So in his first speech, again, Tsofar had said that God's wisdom is great, it is hidden, he knows more than anybody, and he punishes according to the information that only he has. If you will repent, if you will approach God, things will be good for you, your turmoil will end, your rage will end. This is all familiar at this point. That theme of the happy ending is one that we've seen in various speakers. Job had responded at the time, both to the collective and to Tsofar individually, that God is indeed the greatest, but he is the source of all destruction. He said, you are misrepresenting God. I am the pious one. He presented his case against God, saying that he hasn't sinned, and if he has sinned, it's beneath God to punish him for it anyway. And then last week, we saw most of Tsofar's second speech, in which Tsofar shifts gears. As we noted last time, he stops the philosophical arguments, and he takes everything personally. He says, I am personally offended and angry and upset at the things that you are saying. And he responds with personal jabs at Job, statements about how Job is suffering for his wickedness, including the loss of his children potentially being because of their wickedness. He is absolutely, there's no real word for it besides unacceptable in the way that he speaks to Job. Remember that we've said this is verbal abuse, what he is doing. So we saw the first part in which he introduced his speech by talking about how offended he is. We talked about the second part of his speech in verses 5 to 11 in chapter 20, when he talked about the wicked falling from their heights and disappearing. We then moved through the middle of the chapter, and really the bulk of the chapter, sentences 12 to 23, in which he talks about wickedness as cooking and the fruits of wickedness as poison, and how the appetite is itself destructive. And that was the last thing that we did, was to talk about how the appetite for wickedness is itself destructive, whether it's because he destroys all those who he would have consumed. He consumes all the food available, so to speak. We applied it also to the idea that he leaves nothing for later because he's confident that he will always be able to victimize somebody. And finally, filling his belly is the signal for his downfall. And that brings us to chapter 20, sentence 24. If you're using the Art Scroll Tanakh that the shul provides, it's page 1647. It sometimes feels like we've read 1,646 pages of this, doesn't it? So here, Tsofar says something which is really, I think, a direct response to an earlier speech that Job gave. If you actually look back first, it's worth seeing it first. Go back to the end of chapter 16, sentences 18 and 19. It is on page 1,643. This is sentences 18 and 19. When Job had said that God would side with him, but he said in sentences 18 and 19, Eretz al tachasi dami, right? Earth, do not cover my blood, a phrase which we use and in memorial prayers for those who have been killed. Eretz al tachasi dami, v'al yihi makom lezakasi. Let there be no place for my cries, meaning let them not be hidden and stored away somewhere. Let them be out in the open, where everybody will hear them and see what I have to say and see how I've suffered. And he said, gam ata hine v'ashamayim edi. My witness, my testimony is in the heavens, v'sahadi b'meromim. My witness is up in the upper realms. And we noted when we saw this last year that he's calling heaven and earth as his witnesses. Heaven and earth should testify on his behalf, something that Moshe does already back in the Torah. Right? Hazinu ha-shamayim v'adaber v'tishmaharetzim reifi, ha-idosi v'chamayom v'sashamayim v'sa'aretz. The idea that heavens and the earth will be the witnesses. Heavens and the earth signifying the natural world, or alternatively, heavens and earth signifying God and man, or heavens and earth signifying that which is eternal and it's always here. It's the setting in which the entire human drama plays out. All the different layers to that we discussed when we looked at chapter 16. Job has said, I want heaven and earth to be my witnesses. They testify for me. And Sofar is going to turn around and rob him of that. In the closing parts of his speech, again, we're back in Parakhav, chapter 20, sentences 24 to 28, almost the end of this speech, page 1647. Take a look at what Sofar does. He says, describing the fate of this wicked person who, when we last saw him, was about to fill his belly, and then God zapped him. Doesn't actually say zap in the Hebrew, but I feel like it carries the message. Yivrach mi neshek barzel, tachlefeu keshes nechusha. He, the wicked person, will flee from neshek barzel. Neshek is a weapon, ammunition, right? From iron weapons. Tachlefeu keshes nechusha. He is made to pass on by keshes nechusha, the copper bow. Right? Nechushat, Nechoshet is one way to take it. You can take Nechushat in a couple of ways, but they all come down to the same point. You see, they translate it as brass. We noted this going back to when we did Daniel together, that Nechoshet technically is a copper alloy, which, depending on whether you combine it with tin or with nickel, will either produce brass or bronze. So Nechushat, when you see it in Tanakh, generally is either brass or bronze. They render it here as brass. Not the point. The point is that it is predicted that this is going to be the source of the attack on Eov, Barzel, and Nechoshet, right? Which are terms that in fact are used in the Torah for that which God brings against the villain. The Barzel and Nechoshet. Vayu shamecha asharoshcha Nechoshet, v'aretz asher tachtecha Barzel. In the Tochacha, when God warns the Jews of what's going to happen if they don't follow the covenant, he says the heavens above will be Nechoshet, copper, brass, bronze, whatever you like. And the land below you will be iron. So he says, this, the copper and iron is going to be the weapon against you, Eov. And then he continues and says, Shalap vayetze migeva. He says, the weapon is drawn, the weapon is unsheathed. Vayetze migava, and it already emerges. Migeva. So migeva, they translate it here as leaving the sheath. However, it's usually rendered by various commentators as it already leaves the body. Meaning, as soon as it's drawn, it runs him through. There isn't a blink of an eye. There isn't a time for him to even think before the weapon strikes him. Uvarak mimerora so yahaloch. And Barak is lightning, correct. Mimarara so yahaloch. So they render it here as from its bitterness, but it's also rendered as being from the spleen inside, the place of the mara, or the liver. The mimarara so yahaloch didn't do so well in bio. Yes, because they're trying to render it all along the lines of the blade that's drawn from the sheath. But you'll see why I do this. Mimro raso yahaloch alav emin. amen being intimidation. So the image that you bring here, or fright as they bring it here, is of him being struck down by a weapon. Continuing with the iron and the copper, you would just take it as a sword and the blade that emerges running him through. But you'll see in a second why we take this as lightning as well. Kol choshech tamun litzpunav, ta'achlehu eish lo nupach. All darkness, or total darkness, is stored away litzpunav. Litzpunav, what is tsafun? Hidden, right? Like at the Seder when you take out the afikomen. The darkness is hidden, lies in wait for that which he had hidden, that which he had taken from others, or himself, hiding from those who he has victimized. Te'ochlehu eish lo nupach. He will be consumed by fire that is lo nupach. That has not been, word in English. What, sorry? No. If you think of a bellows, right? A bellows is a mapuach. It blows air into the fire. Lo nupach, it has not had air blown into it to inflame it. I don't know how to say this in English. Not necessarily, so that's what I want to get to. Sorry? Fanned? Okay.
Yeah,
they put an unfanned flame. It doesn't really do it justice.
No,
you know. Yeah, because they're already trying to get to the next point with this, what kind of flame this is. Hold on 1 second, just to explain. The word in Hebrew for apple, how do you say apple? Tapuach. The word in Hebrew for potato? Tapuach adama. The word in Hebrew for an orange? Tapuach zahav, which is shortened to tapuz. The word tapuach means something that has been inflated. So you get something that is bloated like that, and then it is applied for all of these different fruits slash vegetables that have roughly the same shape. The tapuach adama is the apple from the ground. Tapuach zahav is the golden apple. But it's all this. That's why before they found the fragrant apple forests, before the archaeologists found the remnants of these forests in Israel in the 1950s, they thought that when you see tapuach in Tanakh, it actually refers to, some said quince, some suggested other fruits, because we find fragrant apples, or fragrant tapuach, described in Shir HaShirim and elsewhere in Tanakh, and they said, well, there are no such forests in Israel. It must be that all these Jews have it wrong. And in fact, it's a quince or some other thing, until the 1950s, when if you look online, they have the Jewish Encyclopedia. The Jewish Encyclopedia was printed in the first decade of the 20th century. And if you look up tapuach there, they'll insist there were no apples. That's what they'll tell you. But it's just flat wrong. They had fragrant apples. But my point in quoting all of this is just to show you that in general, this term is a term for something that is bloated and inflated with air. A blacksmith. How do we call a blacksmith?
Napach.
Because he blows the air into the fire to increase the flame. And so Eish lo nupach is a fire that has not had the air blown into it to make it stronger. So that leads Rebecca to ask, does that mean that this is a smoldering flame? Susan, what were you going to say?
This definition, this translation entirely falls different than yours.
Excellent. Doing my job.
Was laid up for his treasures, and then it says, "A fire not blown by that shall consume him." That's what.
Yeah, no, that's good.
And then it says, "And it shall go ill with him."
That's the next part of the sentence. We're not there yet.
Where is treasures? You didn't.
Yeah, it's funav, that which is hidden of his, meaning that which he has stolen from people and hidden away. They're adding in the word treasure. The verse says that of his which is hidden. The word treasure is what they threw in there as the implication.
I was looking for it. So
okay, Debbie, what?
Hey, I'm so lost. Because you're sort of translating as you're going.
Yeah.
I have an old brain. Would you take verse 24 and 25 and read them coherently?
No. I'm going to try. Yivrach mineshek barzel. He will run from iron weapons. Okay?
I don't mean the Hebrew.
Okay, he'll run from iron weapons. Copper, brass, bronze, whatever, will make him pass. They render here, I see, as will pierce him. But the word in Hebrew, chet lamed pei, is normally to pass. It is drawn, and then either it comes out of that which it had been inside of, it comes out of its sheath, or alternatively, it is drawn and it runs him through.
Yeah.
This weapon that has been drawn. And then again, the shining blade, right, is one way to read the next line. The shining blade, we will go forth, or the blade or the lightning will go forth from inside of him with fear upon him. Ya'aloch alav emim will bring fear upon him, will intimidate him. That's the best I can do for a yes, potentially, maybe. Maybe. I mean, the problem is, as I've said before, there are a lot of different ways to translate these sentences. I wouldn't say that any one of them has claimed to being perfect. The Dad Mikra on that last phrase says, Habarak yinakeves miro raso, v'achlof darka, v'yetse mimeno l'alechas l'darko. The barak, the lightning, will pierce his miro ra, the place of the bile that's inside him, and will go on its way, and will keep on going. Will just, you know, it'll pierce right through him, and just keep on going on the other side. So there are multiple ways to render the line. Don't be surprised by that. When the message that he's giving, if you take that read, you take really either read, is a message of the punishment that is about to befall him. It's the suffering that he is about to experience that is predicted for the wicked by Tzofar. And it is, if you read it the way that Dat Mikra reads it, it adds a layer to it. In other words, the read that you have there, and that most people, I think, based on what people are saying, have in their English, is simply the scary nature of this weapon, this shiny sword that is going to pierce him. What Dat Mikra is seeing here also is the message of the speed with which it's going to come. That you're not going to have a shot at preventing this from happening. It's drawn and it's through, and that's it. It's all over.
There's no redemption.
Yes. Correct. And that's one of the points that we see in so far is, in his second speech, there is no idea of pray to God and things are going to get better. He dropped that after his first speech. Yeah.
And just not prolong it. And this fire that has not...
Right, so now I want to get to the fire. So what is this fire that is not blown into, the fire that is not fanned? What is that? So does that mean that it's... Based on what Sofar is saying, does this mean a fire that's not going to do a good job? Like, I guess a smoldering flame is going to consume him? Unlikely, right?
Oh, no.
Yes?
A non-human fire.
A non-human fire, exactly.
So Rashi is Eshel, it's the fire of hell, Gehenna.
So the one source which I actually thought I had brought on here, I wonder if I brought it maybe last week and just forgot to include it in this week's. It might be in last week's. It's okay. But Rashi here renders it based on I didn't bring it. Based on Masechet Smachot. Masechet Smachot is one of the many volumes that are attached to Shas, that are attached to the Talmud. You have the normal 63 tractates, the normal 63 volumes, and then you have what are called Masechtot Kitanot, which are crafted roughly the same time, and they're not nearly as popular as the others. You will find them in a standard shas in the back of the volume that contains Avodah Zarah, but Masechet Smachot, Smachot meaning Sameach, meaning happy occasions, is actually has a lot about Avelut, a lot about mourning. And in it, when it tells the story of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion and his murder at the hands of the Romans, so if you remember the story about how they wrap him in his Torah and then they put wet sponges in and then they light him on fire, so when he is called upon to open his mouth and die quicker, he says, in the wording that's found in Masechet Smachot, it's in Perekhet, he says, better that my soul should be taken by a fire that is nupach than by a fire that is lo nupach. Better that it should be taken by a fire that is a human fire that requires someone to inflame it than to be taken by Gehinom, right? Hell, that's the idea. Eish lo nupach is a divine fire. And that is how the sages took this line when he says that Io will be consumed by a fire that doesn't require inflaming. It is a supernatural flame. That's what they're seeing here. If you wanted to take it with that reference to the supernatural, I would say the way to read it would be a fire that is so strong that it doesn't require a human being to do this because it's just a powerful flame. That would be another way to read it. And then he says, Yera sarid be'ohalo. Yera, ra, bad, right? Good. But bad. Sarid, sarid is a remnant, right? Those who remain in his tent will also suffer from whatever it is that's befalling him. However, and that's another, again, another reference to the suffering of his family along with him. But it's something else as well. Go back to what we saw in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, sentence 21. We made much of this sentence at the time. Right? We said then, Ein sarid la'achlo, he consumes and doesn't leave a remnant. He doesn't leave a remnant, and therefore when he is consumed by the fire, he will have no remnant either. It's measure for measure. It's very clear because it says, Ein sarid le'ochlo. There is no sarid. There is no remnant when he eats. Therefore, te'ochlehu, he will be eaten, and the sarid in his tent will also be consumed. He doesn't get a sarid because he didn't leave anybody a sarid. He doesn't get a remnant because he didn't leave anybody else a remnant. That's the message that so far is giving him. And finally, he concludes this part by saying, Pasuk Chav Zayin, and here's where the reference back to chapter 16 makes sense, Yigalu shamayim avono ve'eretz mitkomama lo. The heavens will reveal his sin, and the land, mitkomama. So mitkomama, Dad Mikra says, will stand as an enemy. They have rise up here, which is just as good. Rise up against. The land will rise up against him. The heavens reveal his sin, and the earth stands against him. Yigel yevul beito, nigarot biyom apo. All of the fortune of his house, the yevul. Yevul normally is like what the field produces. All that, the fortune he had amassed in his house is going to be revealed for the world to see. People will be able to identify what he took, what he stole. Nigarot, it will run out as a stream. Biyom apo, on the day of God's rage. So he writes. So again, I'm stopping short of the last line for a second. But so far, statement is that, first of all, you see Yigalu and Yigal, that play on words in between 27 and 28. But he says the heavens and the earth are going to turn against him. You, back in chapter 16, Job, you said the heavens and the earth are your allies. You said that the heavens and the earth are going to testify to your righteousness, that you are the one who is good and that everybody else is evil. Just the opposite. The heavens and the earth, with their lightning that he referred to before, and now you understand why I rendered Barak as lightning. The heavens and the earth, with their weapons, are going to demonstrate that you, Job, have sinned. Clear? Somewhat? Come.
Actually, they add here as to the fire either from Gehenna or a fire sent down from heaven, perhaps lightning.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good too. The link of the heavens, I think, is important there, fitting in with the theme of the section, whether it's supernatural or whether it is from a heavenly source. But that's the idea. I brought you a medrash in source number one. I'm not going to read it out because I don't want to confuse things further. But I don't really. But the midrash that's quoted there, it has Moshe using the verse from here to show heaven and earth standing against the one who has sinned. So what Sofar is doing is he is turning Job's message on its head. You said you're righteous, and I am the sinner, and I'm the one who has God wrong? Just the opposite. God punishes the wicked, he does it quicker than you think, and the heavens and earth that you are calling upon to testify for you, they're actually the ones who are going to testify against you. And there's a little bit of a theme here, which we've seen before in the book, the issue of trial by ordeal. Right? Does this ring a bell? Trial by ordeal is the system in which, if someone is accused of some sin, they put the person up for some form of physical suffering, and if he betrays pain, that shows he must really be guilty. Because if he was innocent, then God would protect him. And we saw in an earlier chapter, Job accused them of convicting him based on trial by ordeal. Seeing that I am suffering, seeing that there are creases in my face, seeing that I am experiencing pain, you take that as evidence that I am guilty, because otherwise I would be fine. Otherwise God would be protecting me. And Job's response to it has been that it's a false test. That is an inappropriate test. But that's what Sofar is doing here. He's saying, the fact that you are suffering reveals your guilt. Yigalu shamayim avono. The heavens reveal his sin by punishing him. That shows that he must be guilty, because otherwise, why would this be happening?
So it wouldn't be for the fact that he is being punished and suffering, it would be
for his sin. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. He's using that as proof. He's really right.
Correct. God has provided the evidence.
Right. So that is the evidence. Because otherwise, it's just like my word against your word.
Yes. Right. Which is much of this book anyway, but
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. That's
yes. Elisha, and then,
Is there also the idea that maybe he sinned in private, and the idea of Legalo to be revealed of his...
For sure. Absolutely. That's been a theme in general in the chapter. If you go back to the message about the food, if you go back to sentence 12, Sofar said, Yakhidena tachas lishono, he keeps his wickedness beneath his tongue. And one of the ideas there, one of the layers there was to hide it from the world. You think that you can do this in secret, Yigalu Shamayim Abono, it's actually going to be revealed. And Yigel Yivul Beiso, everything he has stored up in his house will now be out in the open. And Job, who has declared himself to be innocent, will now be shown to in fact be guilty. All your claims are going to fall apart, Job. On the day when God truly finishes you off, everybody will see that that in fact you've been you've been guilty. So yes, I think that's absolutely part of this. Jules,
this almost hints at the method during the Middle Ages to prove that the person was a witch by throwing her bound and gagged into the water. And if she floated, that was for sure the witch and was executed. If she drowned, well, she was not a witch, but yeah.
Too bad.
Right. Right. Correct.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are numerous differences. I understand why you make the connection, but I think. Yeah, Sharon.
And these people have these ideas about sinners and punishment. So they never have books on it, or they have any religious
right. It's entirely in their own heads. That is true. No one here, although I shouldn't say that entirely, because Eliphaz, when he started out, said that he had a prophetic vision. And then Sofar, in his first speech, said, ask earlier generations. And yeah, they quote anonymous sources, which is, you know, just as good. The less verifiable, the better. But they do, it's true. This is a presentation of personal viewpoints and not a sourced, you know, debate with a bibliography. That is certainly true. So look at Sofar's last line. Pasuk Chav Tet, sentence 29. Ze chelek Adam Rasha me Elokim. This is the portion of a wicked person, what he's going to receive from God. V'nachalas imro me kel, which you could translate in a couple of different ways. One way, the most literal way, would be to read it as the portion that God declares for him. That would be, I think, the most literal way to read it. However, if you take a look at source number 2, Mitzudat David, who's usually very pshat-focused, very focused on literal translation, adds a layer here to see another accusation against Job. Source number two. Rabbi David Altshuler, writing in the 19th century, says, Hagimul hazeh be'atzmo, hu nachalas ha'ish asher imraso hu min hakel. He says, this gimul, this reward, this payback, is itself the portion of a person whose speech is min hakel, meaning from God, meaning against God. Ledaber alav shelo kahogen, speaking of God inappropriately, uleganos ma'asav, and degrading his actions. In other words, it's another statement. Job, you spoke out against divine justice? That's why this is going to happen. That's why this is going to befall you. And it's very interesting because this is sort of the conclusion of sentence four. There's this great envelope structure going on in the chapter where in sentence four, at the beginning, right after he talked about how insulted he was by everything Job had said, he said, Hazos yadata mini ad, mini sam adam alei aretz. He says, didn't you know this from the beginning? From the time that human beings were put on earth by God. Hazos yadata, didn't you know this? And he concludes with, Zeh, this is chelak adam. That's what a portion is going to adam rasha. This is the portion of a wicked person from God. Everything I've described in between sentence 4 and sentence 29, that's what you should have known, Job, since eternity. That this is what happens to wicked people, and that's why you're suffering, Job. You want to know? There. That Job is the truth. So far, is responding to a personal insult by becoming less philosophical, by becoming more personal, by becoming less positive, and much more negative, right? Think about the way we respond in debates, right? When you're insulted and you're upset, there you go. This is so far. We've become so far. He says, the wicked harm themselves due to their overlarge appetites. It's going to happen to them. It's going to happen to their families. They're going to disappear. Heaven and earth, which you thought are on your side, are going to conspire to destroy you. And Job, you are personally bad. And I happen to think this may be the reason why so far is gone after this round. Because really, what do you say after this? he has nothing else.
So there's a lot of glee there.
Oh, my. Yeah, oh no, he's like, yeah, I'm going to sit by and watch. I'm going to toast marshmallows. There's no sympathy. Remember what Job wants most, as he expressed already to Eliphaz a few chapters ago. He says, all I ever wanted was for some commiseration. For you to sit there and say, boy, this is terrible. And this is the exact opposite. And he's run out of gas so far. He has no philosophical points to add. He doesn't have the ability to look at it from a thinker's perspective. All he has is insults to throw at Job and to say, you deserve, you know, what you're getting. Yeah?
It's almost like a counseling sessions which can happen, counter-transference. A person is looking for sympathy, but what he expresses hits so much home to the person who's supposed to counsel that he starts lashing out.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's exactly what's going on here. I think you're right. You put a term on it, which is good. But I think that's exactly what's going on. Ralph?
I've mentioned it before, but these are gross generalizations. He doesn't back it up with any reference to events in Tamil, for example.
Right, no, that was right. Sharon had said, there is no citation here. There is no proof, so to speak. These are assertions.
He's just being as egotistical as he's criticizing Job for being.
Yes. Yes. I wasn't aware that human beings weren't allowed to do that. But that's true. This is proof by assertion. Yes.
It's a tight syllogism. God punishes the suffering, you're suffering, therefore God's punishing you. So it's logically unassailable, but that doesn't mean it's right or wrong.
I wouldn't say it is assailable, because the argument could be that suffering comes from another source. Saying that God causes suffering, and even that God causes suffering as punishment, doesn't mean that all suffering has that as its cause. It's logically assailable. But yes, in his mind, this makes perfect sense. In his mind, A led to B led to C.
But he hasn't suffered himself, so really, it's meaningless.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure one needs to suffer in order to be able to empathize with others.
Wow.
I'm not sure that. Let me say that a little differently. A person, in order to truly understand, may need to have experienced it. But in order to express sympathy, and in order to be understanding of somebody, you don't need to have experienced the same thing. Correct. But that's what we see in so far second speech. But the big question isn't this. The big question is, what in the world is Job going to say back? Okay? You just faced this cold indictment and an accusation. What do you possibly say in return to this horribly harsh and insensitive person? So that's what we need to know.
Are terribly harsh.
Okay, no, you're right, that's something. Well, let's see, because we have chapter 21. Fortunately, the book doesn't stop here. Let's see where it goes. So, again, I gave you the table on the sheet so you can see the speeches. I didn't fill in for you Job's reply. I left that for homework. You can turn it in next week. That was a joke for the new people. But what we're going to see at this point, maybe I'll turn off the...